From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Death is part of life and deserves to be discussed. Gilchrist bereavement specialist Debbie Jones suggests ways to acknowledge grief and tells us about the Day of Healing and Remembering, honoring our losses. It's a community event on Saturday where art therapist Sharon Strauss will prepare activities to recognize the loss of loved ones.
We're offering a place of community. Come out and be with others and see that you are not alone and there is nothing wrong with you. You know, grieving is not a disease. This is a natural part of being human.
Plus, we learn why people choose to donate their bodies to medical research and how their contributions are honored at a state memorial service. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Wrestling with the questions and feelings, even the logistics surrounding death and loss, is difficult but necessary. When death is related to trauma, the issues to wade through can seem even more opaque. Our guests today are hoping to shed light on these subjects. Later in the show, we'll meet an anatomical services specialist to discuss why people choose to donate their bodies to medical research and what's involved in that. Joining us now is Gilchrist Chief Counseling Manager Debbie Jones to talk about a day of healing and remembering, honoring our losses. It will take place this Saturday, June 15th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Zeta Center for Healthy and Active Aging on Reisterstown Road in Baltimore. Welcome back to On the Record, Debbie.
Thank you, Sheila. It's good to be here again.
It's nice to see you. Also with us is clinical art therapist Sharon Strauss, proprietor of Artful Grief, a Diary of Healing. She works with people experiencing traumatic loss, including losing loved ones to suicide and death in the military. She'll be facilitating the art therapy activities and tools on Saturday. Welcome, Sharon.
It's good to be here. Thank you, Sheila.
Debbie, why is Gilchrist hosting an event like this in Baltimore City?
Well, as you know, Gilchrist serves families in Baltimore City under our hospice care and our elder medical care. And so we feel it's important, in addition to serving them as someone is at the end of life, we feel it's important to serve the families after the death as well. In addition, we feel it's very important to serve the community because the city is really suffering with many types of losses, trauma losses, accidental losses, suicide. So we as an organization really support the community after a death of a loved one, and our bereavement program is very committed to doing that. So that's why this event is taking place, because it is open to the community at large.
So this Saturday, what can visitors expect? Give us an overview of this event.
Well, we will have an opening where people will, first of all, come in and register and then get settled. And then we'll have an opening where we have Maria Broom, who is very good at her medicine dance. And she's going to open the day with about a 30-minute program.
She is just so powerful in terms of dance, therapy, movement, poetry, and she really creates rituals of opening. So this is going to be a wonderful opening to this event.
So
that's the opening. And then individuals be able to choose, because we'll have various opportunities between 10:30 and 12:30, where they can choose to either go to breathing while grieving, and that will be some chair yoga and breathing techniques. They can actually, we have a portable labyrinth. So if the day is sunny, which we're keeping our fingers crossed, we're going to have that outside in the garden, and people can walk the labyrinth. We have a kids' corner where parents can leave their kids right with the two facilitators, and they will create some artwork in memory of loved ones. We'll also have opportunities where people can just sit and hear about grief. We have a program called Let's Talk About Grief. And then Sharon is going to do her Artful Grief Studio.
And Sharon, tell me about that. You'll be facilitating art therapy activities. What are those?
We will. And there'll be two other art therapists joining me in this activity. Art therapy is so wonderful, I think, in terms of addressing the issues around trauma and loss, because so much of trauma, it's very difficult for people to talk, to be able to articulate what are their feelings, what are they going through. And so art provides an opportunity for those to settle in a creative way and be able to express what they may keep private and inside. And we're going to be offering two different activities that are very combined. We're going to be offering memory boxes. And I love this because if you think of a box, it's inside and outside. So they're going to have an opportunity to create on the outside of the box what they show to the world, to others. And then on the inside of the box, what do I keep private? What do I keep to myself? What is very precious? They can also put the lid on the box to protect it, to keep it to themselves. So we feel like this is going to be a wonderful opportunity for creativity and for community. And it's also a very meditative process, creating is.
And before you describe the rest of it, let me just remind folks that are listening to On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Gilchrist Grief Counseling Manager Debbie Jones and with Sharon Strauss, clinical art therapist. Strauss also serves as practicum faculty with the Portland Institute for Loss and Transition. We're talking about the Gilchrist Day of Healing and Remembering, Honoring Our Losses, which happens this Saturday. So you said there are two, and you describe the memory boxes.
Yes. And so the second is this wonderful national community art project. It's called the Soul Box Project. And so essentially, people will be given a piece of paper and they will be shown how to construct a box from two pieces of paper. So here is an added process of actually creating the box themselves. And the Soul Box Project is intended for addressing every person who's been affected by gun violence. And we felt like with the issues in the city and across the country, you know, this is something that really needs to be addressed. And so this National Community Art Project will address that. And then they have the opportunity to send them to this organization, which is in Portland, to be a part of an initiative that goes across the country.
I'm not quite clear on what these, I get that people will make the boxes, but what is in or on the boxes?
They will collage onto them, paint onto them, perhaps put their loved one's name on the box. So they're going to create, you know, something that's creative in memory of someone who has died through gun violence or someone who's been affected. So this really serves as, you know, a way for us to remember, mm-hmm. to remember and honor our loved ones, and then to perhaps send it off to be a part of a national movement, very much like the AIDS quilt, that these Soul Box installations will go around the country to raise awareness.
Lots of different ways of touching this issue. Why do you think education about bereavement resources is important?
It's very important. I think we don't do enough in our culture to talk about death and dying, and we think people really get over their grief within weeks to months when people, it never leaves us. I always say we wear our grief like a second skin, and that it's not that we don't function, it's not that we don't heal, and it's not that we don't have laughter and hope again. But when we lose someone, especially to violence, to gun violence, to suicide, to anything traumatic, it is something that we never forget. And so if we have these events that help people find a way to heal, to find some hope, then we see the transition from individuals, you know, suffering and to a place where they can cope and move on in their lives.
Sharon, what would you add?
Yeah, it brings them out of isolation. Mm-hmm. Often they're sitting at home, and, you know, if the loss has happened a while ago, they're still thinking, what is the matter with me? Mm-hmm. And, you know, grief, it takes a long time. There's a lot of healing that has to happen. Yeah. And so we're offering a place of community. Like, come out and be with others and see that you are not alone and there is nothing wrong with you. You know, grieving is not a disease. This is a natural part of being human.
Couple quick logistics. Do you have to sign up in advance for this
day? We would prefer it, yes. We would like you to register, but we are welcoming anybody that will walk in as well.
Sharon, what do you hope people walk away from this event with?
I think that they are part of a community, that we see them, that they're cared for, and that there is hope and healing. There is the possibility of moving into a different place, that the grief that sits in their body, that they are suffering with, that something can be done with that. And Gilchrist is a wonderful organization that is reaching out and giving people possibility.
Debbie, what are you hoping people take from this?
Just to walk away with some hope and healing and know that they're not alone and that they will have a community of kinship with individuals who have lost a loved one.
Thank you for telling us about it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank
We're
you.
Grateful to be here.
Debbie Jones is Grief Counseling Manager at Gilchrist. Sharon Strauss is a clinical art therapist. A day of healing and remembering, honoring our losses, will start at 10 a.m. this Saturday, June 15th, and run until 1 p.m. at the Zeta Center for Healthy and Active Aging on Reisterstown Road in Baltimore City. We have a link to more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. After the break, a different discussion about death. We'll speak with a member of the Maryland Anatomy Board about why people choose to donate their bodies to medical research and what's involved. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us on the record.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about issues surrounding death. Earlier, we spoke with two bereavement specialists about the Gilchrist Day of Healing and Remembering, Honoring Our Losses event coming up on Saturday. Now we're joined by Dan Hensley. He works with the Maryland Department of Health's State Anatomy Board as an anatomical services specialist. And I should warn listeners, our conversation will include descriptions of how donated bodies are processed for medical research. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
First, what does the Maryland State Anatomy Board do?
The Maryland State Anatomy Board in Maryland takes care of all donated bodies, anybody that donates their body to science, whole body donors, and it also takes care of all the unclaimed bodies in the state of Maryland. This totals about 3,200 cases in a year now. If we were to grossly generalize that number, we see about 1,600 whole body donors and about 1,600 unclaimed individuals in a year.
What is your role?
My role as an anatomical services specialist and also one of our lab managers is to handle all donated cases and how they will be dispersed to the medical schools and how they will be used, and also ensuring that all unclaimed bodies are cared for and properly cremated and tracked.
I want to learn more about what you do, but let me ask you first, what are the reasons that people donate their bodies to science?
Well, it's a kind of very altruistic motive. A lot of people want to see something good come from their body. They want to see science advance. They want to see medical education advance. A lot of the things we do there are for educational and research purposes. And a lot of the people that donate, when they talk about it or I've asked them why, it's because they want to see advancement in medicine. When people kind of reach a certain age, they're seeing a lot more medical procedures, they're seeing more doctors, and they want to see something good come from it, basically.
Can anyone donate?
Anybody can donate. Any age, or as long as you're over 18, there's a thing called the Uniform Gift Act, and that's a national thing. Anybody over the age of 18 can sign a form and donate their body to science.
And any restrictions?
We do not have any restrictions. A lot of commercial tissue banks and a lot of other universities throughout the country have restrictions upon the donors they will accept, and it can be cause of death or age or weight-based. We do not have these restrictions. One of the reasons we don't have these restrictions is because we also take in all the state's unclaimed bodies, and it kind of makes little sense to put restrictions on donors when we're also going to be accepting unclaims in any state and condition.
Where does one go to apply?
Unfortunately, the donor forms are not yet online. That is a thing that we are going to be doing. There's been a lot of changes that we're trying to implement since the retirement of our former director. So one of those changes is things being on the online. Currently, you have to call the anatomy board, or if we're having a talk somewhere, we usually bring donor forms with us.
And how is this different than organ donation, the thing people can sign on their driver's license to
say?
So
the driver's license and whole body donation, you can do both. You can do both things, but organ donation is for transplant use. Living Legacy handles that here in Maryland. You'd have an organ removed, and then it would be go to a living person to continue their life. You'd have your heart taken at your moment of death, and then that could be transplanted into a living individual.
Whereas the whole body donation is for medical research.
Yes, whole body donation is for medical research and also education. That is the biggest piece we're a part of, is education. Gross anatomy students, first year medical students learning normalized anatomy in their first year program, and also clinical-based research and education. We see a number of paramedics, EMTs, plastic surgeons, orthopedic surgeons. They come into our clinical lab and they practice different techniques, existing techniques and new techniques to further their own practices.
That's Dan Hensley, Anatomical Services Specialist with the Maryland State Anatomy Board. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about body donation for use in medical research. So you said 3,200 cases in a year. How does that number compare with other anatomy boards in the country?
Well, there's no other real anatomy board in the country. We're very unique in Maryland. And a lot of other states, you would donate directly to a university or you would donate directly to a tissue bank. There are also commercial tissue banks in the state of Maryland. However, in Maryland, the way it works is you donate to the state anatomy board and we disperse the bodies that are donated based upon need by medical schools and the conditions of the bodies. You cannot donate specifically to Johns Hopkins here. You have to donate to the anatomy board, and then we would disperse bodies as needed.
Why do you think the numbers are so high in Maryland?
For donors specifically, I think you got to give it to the citizens of Maryland. I think a lot of people really believe in what they know about the program. Our former director, Ronald Wade, he used to visit many nursing homes and schools and visit pretty much anybody that would listen to him. He wanted to inform the public of the donor program and the good that can come of it.
What was his case?
What was his case?
What did he tell people about why
he told people the good that can come of the program? Exactly. Not just the gross anatomy students learning first year anatomy, but also the clinical lab and what good can come from the lab. Intubations, plastic surgeries, and not just plastic surgeries like a rhinoplasty or a facelift, but we have programs that are funded by the DOD. Okay, so what that means
is the Department of Defense.
Yeah, it's the Department of Defense, and it's military-based funding so that soldiers coming back, maybe they've had a deformity they've incurred while in the field or in combat, and these things, these funds are funneled through to improve techniques, to give them maybe a little bit of peace of mind in the way that they've come back and in their appearance, kind of help mm-hmm. them out. And also orthopedic surgeons, they come in, they work on new techniques, new ways to approach joint injuries and the use of your limbs as you age. And so Ron would always promote those things and the good that can come of that, the new techniques that can be developed, and just the practice of those techniques, so that when you, say, are at a hospital, you're working with or being worked on by a surgeon that isn't learning it in the moment, and they're not inexperienced. They've been to a clinical lab and be able to practice these surgeries and really know what they're doing in a very, very informed way.
How do you prepare the bodies for use in research?
We do two different things at the anatomy board. We prepare bodies for gross anatomy students, which means that they are embalmed. And we also prepare bodies for clinical research and education, which would mean that they are fresh cadavers. They are not embalmed and preserved in a more thorough way. They are used fresh tissue. So these two cases are separated into embalmable cases and clinical cases or surgical cases. Embalmable cases, they are embalmed and preserved in a way that completely saturates all the tissues. So the tissue can be dissected and that students can learn from the tissue over a series of weeks and months in their clinical or in their gross anatomy lab. The clinical lab, we prepare the cadavers in a way that they're more lifelike. And being more lifelike, these clinicians can come in and practice on tissues that are much more like what they would see in a surgical room,
And that presumably is a shorter window.
Shorter window. And because of the number of people we see, it tends to be about 2 weeks we might try to utilize somebody that would be a surgical donor or a surgical case for us.
And the cadavers that are embalmed can be used for how long?
They can be used indefinitely, actually. The chemicals we use, sounds odd, but if the tissues are kept moist with the chemicals we're using, they can be used over many years.
What happens to the bodies once they're no longer used for study?
When an individual is done with their study or education program, we have everybody individually cremated. We have a contracted crematory that will cremate all the bodies, just as they would in a funeral home setting. They are cremated and they are placed in an urn, and then the bodies are either returned to the family if they are a donor, or if they were unclaimed, they are buried in the state gravesite at Springfield Hospital Center.
Within the last year, there was at least one case where the cremated remains were given to the wrong family. What changes has the department put in place so that doesn't happen again?
To ensure that something like that never happens again, we have increased the funding, and we are going to have a tracking system in place. There's going to be an injectable tracker. It's a little microchip, basically, a little pill-like microchip that will be injected into each cadaver, unclaimed and donor, and they will be able to track the bodies through this process. We also have a new computer system that we're putting in, a new donor database, and that each member of the lab staff will have an iPad with them and a barcode scanner, because we will also be implementing a system where we have a new series of tags for each individual coming in, so that nothing like that could ever happen again.
The Anatomy Board hosts a memorial service each year for those who donated their bodies to medical research. Describe it.
In the past, it's always been held at Springfield Hospital Center, the third Monday in June. This year, it's going to be in a different place. It's going to be held at Century High School. The reason for that is, luckily, for the last 40 years, we haven't had any rain. We haven't had anything like that. Ron somehow lucked out, and that never happened. But to ensure nothing like that happens, and to also accommodate space for all the unclaimed families and donor families that attend, and the medical students that sometimes attend, we were going to have it at an auditorium at a Century High School in Sykesville.
Does it tend to be a pretty big crowd?
It actually does tend to be a pretty big crowd. I used to work at Springfield when I was younger, and we would set up chairs for hours trying to have enough space for everybody to have a seat. There's sometimes be standing room only. And Ron, when he started this, when he had this implemented, there is a priest, a rabbi, and so on and so forth. that all come, and they each have something to say. There is poems read, and we, in the past, had a bagpiper. I'm not sure if that's going to be there this year or not, but it's all there to honor everybody that's donated their bodies to science and the gift that they have given, and also honor the people that didn't have families that were able to handle a funeral service.
And you say sometimes medical students come.
Yes, sometimes medical students come to pay their respects to the cadavers that they worked on and learn from. A lot of students, they refer to them as their very first teacher, their first professor maybe. That's who they learn from maybe more than anything. Maybe not necessarily what they see in the book, but what they see in the classroom with the cadaver, what they're learning from that individual as they dissect and learn anatomy.
I really appreciate your telling us about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dan Hensley of the Maryland State Anatomy Board. He's an anatomical services specialist. We've been discussing the logistics of donating one's body for medical research. The Maryland State Anatomy Board's annual memorial service will take place at Century High School, 355 Ronsdale Road in Sykesville, on Wednesday, June 26th at 1 p.m., a different location from previous years. The burial site and marker is still located at Springfield Hospital Center, approximately 4 miles from the service. We have a link to more information about the Maryland State Anatomy Board and the memorial service at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.